Okay, good afternoon. I want to start by addressing the two big aftershocks that have hit Christchurch today, one of magnitude 5.5 and one of magnitude 6. They've both been significant shakes which have caused renewed damage. To give you some idea of the scale of today's aftershocks, the magnitude 6 quake, I'm advised, was an 8 on the Mercalli scale, which measures the intensity of earthquakes. By comparison, the February 22nd earthquake was a 9 on the Mercalli scale. These latest aftershocks have caused a renewed level of concern and upset for Christchurch residents, who have found them frightening and unsettling. The government at this point is still collating information about the earthquakes. In the last hour, though, I've spoken to Mayor Bob Parker. They are considering whether to declare a local emergency to allow them to better respond to the situation. He's advised me that there's more damage to the CBD and eastern suburbs. Power is out in some areas, and there is further damage to water and wastewater services. There's also new liquefaction. It's another blow to the Christchurch residents who have already endured so much. However, today's events in no way weaken the government's long-term commitment to rebuild Christchurch and surrounding areas. In terms of the government's immediate response beyond emergency services, Gerry Brownlee is flying down to Christchurch as soon as possible, and the National Christchurch Management Centre has been staffed to monitor the situation. I acknowledge that this has been a setback for Christchurch and its people, but it does not lessen our resolve to rebuild. The people of Christchurch should know that all New Zealanders are thinking of them and will continue to support and stand by them at this very difficult time. Today I'm announcing I'll be visiting India at the end of next week. This trip is at the invitation of India's Prime Minister Manmohan Singh and will focus on boosting two-way trade between our countries. I will be accompanied by the Minister of Trade, Tim Grosser, and a 25-strong business delegation from New Zealand. India is a rapidly rising player in the Asia-Pacific region, and we want to build on our already strong economic, social and sporting ties. I'll meet with Prime Minister Singh in New Delhi, and we will discuss making further progress on the New Zealand-India Free Trade Agreement negotiations. The trade potential of India, the Indian market is huge, and we've set a target of growing two-way trade from $1.28 billion to $3 billion by 2014. We also want greater engagement across a range of sectors, including science and innovation, Bollywood, New Zealand filmmaking co-productions, defence, tourism and education. We will travel by Air Force 757, departing on Sunday the 26th of June and returning Friday the 1st of July, and we'll visit New Delhi, Agra and Mumbai. In terms of my activity this week, tomorrow I'll speak at Parents Inc. Breakfast at the Michael Fowler Centre. On Wednesday I'll be opening the Field Days at Mystery Creek. On Thursday, I'm in Auckland for various events, and on Friday, I'm in Te Kuiti and Auckland. On Sunday, I leave for Canberra for the visit we previously announced. When the House resumes tomorrow, the government intends to hold the three-hour debate on the consideration of financial reviews of Crown entities, public organisations and state enterprises. We also intend to make further progress this week on the Telecommunications Amendment Bill. Wednesday is, of course, a Members' Day. Well, at this point we obviously considered the situation, but it wasn't considered serious enough to be a national state of emergency. The first port of call is whether a local emergency is declared, and that's a matter for Bob Parker and the team on the ground in Christchurch. And as I say, they are considering that at this time. I haven't had any reports of death. I think there have been minor injuries. There's obviously been substantial damage to the CBD again. A number of buildings have suffered major damage. I think there's 56,000 homes have lost electricity again. A number of homes have lost water and wastewater. So it's really a similar rerun to what we saw in the earlier earthquakes, but fortunately in terms of the February 22nd one, we haven't seen a repeated loss of life. I haven't got an update on that, no.
What sort of work does the government now have to undertake to clear out the exposure of EQC and also private insurers, given the latest aftershock?
Well, almost certainly this will be treated as another new incident, but that's a matter for EQC. I mean, they have various rules that determines whether that's the case or not. Certainly the one the other day that was a 5.5, I think, was a new event. But ultimately, you know, we'll need to work our way through, you know, any further claims that come in and take that one step at a time.
Does that mean that government will have to borrow more money than in the budget?
Well, look, I don't think so. I mean, we've provisioned very heavily. It's hard to know exactly, you know, what new damage has been caused. It's very obviously very early on, and whether that's damage to buildings that will already be destroyed and homes that will already need to be either substantially repaired or knocked down. So it's very early days, but it's clear it's, you know, been a major earthquake. I mean, to give you a sense, that Mercalli scale measures lateral land movement. So the first earthquake on the 4th of September was a 6 out of 12. The one on the 22nd was a 9 out of 12. This was an 8. So it's a very violent shock. It just gives you a sort of sense of context.
It's 10 months now since the first one on September 4th.
Well, I think that's the biggest effect of today's aftershocks, really, and that is that for the people of Christchurch, I'm sure they just want this to end. Quite frankly, I'm sure they're over all of this, and they want a sense of normality to return, and I think we can all feel their frustration. But, you know, they've got to know that we stand beside them, that we are totally committed to rebuilding the city, and I'm sure these aftershocks will eventually settle down and normality will return. But it's a very frustrating time for the people of Christchurch.
What would you mean for the setback? You mentioned
this
in Christchurch.
How would you characterise it in terms of the delay for rebuilding the city? Well, it's a very early days to be able to quantify that. I mean, I think the major setback is really just in the confidence of people and the levels of frustration that they will be feeling. You know, my hearts really go out to them because they've had now an awful lot of aftershocks, and you know, this has been going on for 9 months or so. You've got a lot of families where this is again another school day. You've got families separated from one another. There's some liquefaction returning to a lot of the areas in the eastern suburbs, so having dug out the liquefaction and cleared out their homes on several occasions, they're back to square one again, and you can get a sense of just how frustrating and annoying that must be. And that saps away the confidence of the people of Christchurch. But what they have shown is they're very strong-willed, they're stoic people, and they will regroup, but it's very annoying.
But in terms of rebuilding, is there any sense of the need to delay until you're certain that the sort of these range of aftershocks at the level they are at have?
Well, I think in terms of the rebuild, I mean, the CBD was still going to take some time before that can actually take place. The reality is we're going through a process at the moment of demolition of buildings, of clearing of the CBD, of working our way through the new building code that should apply in the Central Business District, and we're in the process of identifying what areas actually, and from a residential perspective, will be able to be rebuilt and which ones won't. Now, that position may have changed as a result of today's aftershocks. I'm not in a position to confirm that, but what I can say is, you know, there will be some time anyway as a sense of reality before we can start rebuilding.
What advice do you have about any school closures or anything like that in terms of amenities?
Don't have any advice on that at this stage. I guess it all depends. The thing that always drives that is it's subject to water, wastewater and electricity being reconnected. So at this point, the advice I've had on electricity is simply in relation to residential homes. And in terms of water and wastewater, I don't have any update from schooling for schooling facilities.
Yep.
I certainly can't rule that out, but that's something we'll get advice on as the afternoon progresses.
Is this likely to delay the time when you can tell the people across the areas are going to be abandoned themselves?
Look, I think we're getting closer to getting a good sense of the areas that we won't be able to rebuild on, and so in that sense it makes no difference because, you know, once you've made that decision, then no further damage can alter that decision any further. But obviously, you know, they are discrete parcels, and then there are other bits which the government's advice up to this point would be that those areas can be rebuilt, and that situation could have changed. I can't comment on that because I simply don't know.
Did you give any consideration to perhaps changing your
schedule? Look, I did, but in the first instance, we've decided it's probably more sense for Jerry Brownlee to go down, and obviously we're monitoring things very closely. As I say, the bunker's sort of effectively in operation, gathering information for us. We're in contact with the mayor and our people on the ground, and the first port of call will be Jerry Brownlee. But I mean, if it's necessary, I'll alter my plans tomorrow.
Have you been advised whether the EQC was able to get adequate reinsurance in place for a magnitude?
My understanding is they have been able to, but that's the latest information that I have, and we need to check that. But I certainly haven't had any advice that they have failed to be able to do that. Yep. Well, I think it's nonsense. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, we've had 9 years of a Labor government which has been tying people up in red tapes and stopping this country actually progressing. We're a government that actually wants to make progress in terms of economic development. Now, we're constantly changing regulations and the laws in relation to economic activity in New Zealand. We've done that recently when it comes to things like aquaculture laws. There'll be plenty of other changes we've made in relation to the RMA. In the case of the Auckland Casino and the new National Convention Centre, that's a site-specific issue. I mean, the reality is that legislation covers that particular licence, and by definition, that would have had to be renegotiated by 2021 anyway. In terms of the scale of that activity, I mean, our view is it's a very good deal for New Zealand and New Zealanders if we can conclude a good deal with Sky City. And the reason for that is we get a $350 million investment, we get 1,000 new jobs when the building is built, we get 800 permanent new jobs, we get a large economic boost. As Minister of Tourism, I can tell you they are the sorts of people we want coming to New Zealand because they spend a lot. And my view is it's a good deal. We're not having to pay for the facility, and we're not having to run the facility. So, you know, it's just practical. Well, look, I think it depends on where they are. So in terms of harm minimisation, the best place for harm minimisation are casinos. The concern we've all had about poker machines has been the proliferation of those machines in small sites, pubs and the likes, in low socioeconomic areas like South Auckland. So if we look at harm minimisation, for instance, it's running at about 0.4%, so about 0.4% of people who attend a casino have a gambling problem, so we acknowledge that, and that's what the levy's there for. So it's, you know, compared to, say, alcohol, that's measured at about 17.5%, so it's a significantly larger issue when it comes to alcohol as opposed to gambling. The other thing is that their target market for the increased gaming machines would actually fundamentally be the Asian market. I mean, they're trying to build an international conference centre, and they're rapidly targeting the international market. So I'm quite comfortable with it. Well, there's been a number of reviews on that, and in fact, if you go and have a look, I think there was a conference actually held a few months ago where Sky City's harm minimisation policies were held up as being, you know, very effective and some of the best in the Australasian and Asian region. So, you know, at the end of the day, we acknowledge there will always be some people engaged in gambling, any form of gambling, whether it's racing, buying lotto tickets, or going to casinos, that will suffer problem gambling issues. We acknowledge that. My point is it's a very small amount, and in my opinion, it's best controlled in a casino environment.
And why can't this convention centre stand on its own feet as a business on its own? Why does it have to be linked to gambling at all?
Oh, well, it can if the government's prepared to make the $350 million investment and run it, but in terms of actually a standalone pay for itself, simply on its own, it won't cover the cost of capital.
But weren't there other proposals that would have required the government to put up less significant $350 million?
No, they're all very substantial.
So the government would have been required to
pay for them.
Yep. So this is a business based on gambling?
No, it's a business where they can do a number of things. I mean, they've got an integrated facility there. They have the capacity actually to make a better return than the other options that were available because they already have a casino facility. They already have two hotels on site. They have numerous bars and restaurants. They have the capability of running a good operation. So they have advantages that other operators don't have because of their existing operations, their scale and their skill. But our view would be they are the best operator to have this. I think it will be a great addition to Auckland. It'll allow lots of new events and things to come to Auckland and to New Zealand. And as Minister of Tourism, we want a national convention centre. It's a good thing.
So the process, if there's any regulatory or legislative changes around gambling laws, that'll be open to submissions. It'll be a transparent process.
Totally, yeah.
So
Yeah, Yeah, it's possible. I mean, look, at the end of the day, this is the process, which is having identified that Sky City is the preferred tenderer, will now go through a dual process. Sky City will go through a process of developing out what they, the actual facility itself, and ultimately seeking resource consent and moving through to the, you know, if it gets sign off, the ultimate construction of that venue. The government will sit down through its negotiating team and negotiate with Sky City primarily on those two issues, the extension of the licence beyond 2021 and the issue of more gaming and poker machines. If it can reach agreement that it's satisfied with, then ultimately we'll go out and declare that we've concluded a deal that we think we're comfortable with. That would then ultimately require a change in legislation, so that legislation would need to be introduced to the House. We have the numbers to support the introduction of that legislation if it takes place prior to the completion of this parliamentary term, and that would go through a normal select committee and second and third reading process. Well, in terms of the first, no, we haven't reached a decision on who we would want to recommend. In terms of the latter, I haven't seen any reports on that, but it's highly unlikely that the, you know, the government wants to support a move in that regard. Well, I can only talk to you as a parent. I can't talk to you as, you know, I have specific information, really. And what I'd say is, I mean, in my opinion, the school has covered all of its responsibilities, and it's been very careful, actually, to talk to both the pupils and the parents about their responsibility. They've been actively engaging with the students in terms of counselling and advice, and they were quite specific prior to the ball. From what I can see, they took appropriate measures. Every person there had to introduce their partner to the housemaster, and they followed the normal steps that one would expect. You know, they demanded that it was an alcohol and drug-free environment.
Was your son at the ball?
Yes. Again, I can't speak from wide experience because we've only got two children, and our daughter obviously didn't go to King's College, so I don't have expansive experience as a parent in terms of other schools. But in my experience, there's nothing unique or different about King's College to many, many other schools around the country. I think that we need to acknowledge, if I was to put my political hat on, that in terms of young people, we need to make progress in terms of improving the drinking culture in New Zealand. I think we need to acknowledge that there is a drug culture, and we need to stand up very strongly against that drug culture, and we need to make improvements when it comes to the drinking culture. And I think if one looks at the proposals that are before the government at the moment, we know that the changes to host laws and the way that we would expect parties to be supervised could be a good step in the right direction in terms of at least acknowledging that those who host a party where those under the age of 18 that are attending would have much greater responsibilities and would need to acknowledge their responsibilities, and parental sign-off would need to be given before alcohol could be served to those young people, because that's not the law at the moment. In terms of drugs in general, obviously, as a government, we stand very firmly against drugs, and we've been making a number of steps, as you're aware, to do everything we can to stamp out P. One issue that's certainly come to our attention in recent times is psychoactive material like chronic. You'll be aware that under the Misuse of Drugs Act at the moment, it's technically legal because the rules at the moment are that you have to prove harm. So in the case of BZP, after a couple of years, harm was proved and it was deemed to be a Class C drug. The Law Commission, when it tabled its report on the Misuse of Drugs Act, made the observation they thought the law should change, and the burden of proof should be that a supplier of a psychoactive material should actually have to prove that it's safe before they can release that product on the market. Now, ministers haven't had an opportunity to consider that, but I'm strongly of the view that that is a good recommendation, and I think there should be changes to the law to ensure that those kinds of materials cannot be introduced in the marketplace until the suppliers of those have proven them to be safe.
The Labour Party,
Well, I don't know anything about that.
Your party president has said today that someone from the head office did access those databases. Do you have a comment on that?
Well, I just don't know anything about it. I mean, I've got far bigger issues to worry about than the failed Labor Party.
Would it be concerning to you that they were accessing that data and supplying it to right wing lobbies?
You'd need to ask them why they were doing it.
In terms of Sky City, when did they approach the government about this proposed
deal? I first approached them as Minister of Tourism. I looked at the issues in relation to the potential for a conference centre, and as a number of parties that we spoke to, I spoke to three or four parties, said, here's a particular option, you guys should consider it.
When was that?
Oh, well over a year ago, I think, from memory.
And just in the view to the King's College this issue as a parent.
Yep. Yes, totally satisfied. I mean, we picked our son up. I personally picked him up after the event. I witnessed an awful lot of kids coming out of that ball. I can certainly confirm there are a lot of young girls who clearly had their shoes giving them grief because they were walking barefoot and carrying them along the road. And lots of young men with their ties that sort of half-mast. But outside that, I didn't see anybody that I could see was, you know, obviously under the influence of anything. I mean, I wasn't checking people. I was sitting in a car waiting for my son, but it wasn't obvious to me that there were issues. I'm not saying that there weren't. I mean, I didn't see every child that went in there and left, but in terms of literally hundreds of people I saw walking past the car, they seemed fine. Well, I acknowledge other countries have it. I haven't had a good look at their proposal, and we'd need to take a look at that and the implications of it. But yeah, I acknowledge other countries have that. You know, we've always been a government that's believed in greater levels of exposure and transparency. But I just need to see what the proposal is.
So, would you say it's a priority item for this government to have a look at?
Definitely not. No. I mean, there's a lot of things we have on our plate, and the order paper is incredibly full. But it will be a members bill, I assume that's what they're proposing. So, I mean, at the end of the day, you know, Members' Day is in the hands of the members and the ballot box.
Just on Christchurch, how patient is the government prepared to be in terms of waiting for the city to stop shaping? Is there a point at which you say you kind of have to rethink the whole the city's entire future?
I don't think we're at that situation or anywhere near that. I mean, I think it's deeply frustrating for the people of Christchurch, and as I say, I'm sure they just want this all to end, and so do we. But at the end of the day, we're totally committed to the rebuild of Christchurch, and I think, you know, I'm not the right person to ask. I'm not a seismologist or a geologist, but, you know, there are aftershocks when you have major events like this. Clearly, we're going through a period of settling down, but in due course, it will settle down, and Christchurch will be rebuilt. Thanks very much.